Criminal Law Revision Commission, Subcommittee Number 1, June 13, 1969, Room 315, Capitol Building. Today's subject, Business and Commercial Frauds, Preliminary Draft Number 1, May 1969, and Parties to Crime, Preliminary Draft Number 1, April 1969.
Been a while. We're advised by Don that we're completely up to date and that we're ready to launch into a new venture. So we're going to start with Parties to Crime. Don, do you want to bring us up to date?
Yeah. Now, do you want to go back over the minutes of April 18 for any reason?
They'd
be approved. Mailed to the room.
Been moved that the minutes of April 18 be approved as printed. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion's carried. Now, okay.
Where are we? All right. Now, one other thing I'd like to mention, Mr. Chairman. Before you, there's a little blue and white book, the American Bar Association. That's the approved draft of their minimum standards relating to sentencing procedures. And I purchased enough copies so every member of the commission could have one. And I've distributed some already to subcommittee number 2 earlier this week. And I anticipate that by the end of August, we'll be getting into sentencing. So I thought we could I'd make these available now, and then when you get an opportunity, you can look through them. They're extremely good analysis of the Model Sentencing Act as compared to the Model Penal Code and their sentencing provisions with respect to options of the court and whatnot. So you can take those with you when you go through here today.
Okay, thank you. Where are the other subcommittees, Don? Are they operating?
We've had a meeting of each of the other two subcommittees this month. We had a meeting this week with subcommittee number 3, or subcommittee number 2 rather. That's Wally Carson's subcommittee, and we went through our first draft on bribery and related offenses, and then we had a meeting week before last with subcommittee number 3, in which we went over responsibility again. And that will be ready shortly, as soon as George Platt is able to bring up some amendments up to date on it. That'll be ready to go to the commission.
And George Platt's going to work pretty much on a full-time basis this summer?
Well, I'm not sure it'll be full-time, but it'll be at least half-time. He'll be working.
And we've got new quarters back here in this building with some facility. Well, I think when we conclude today, I want to talk for a minute about trying to set up a regular meeting day for this subcommittee and use that day, whether it's every third or fourth Friday or Monday or whatever, so that you can project into the next many months that every time that month you'll be meeting for this subcommittee. That's the way the Probate Revision Committee did it, and I think we're going to have to do it, and I think it'll be easier. Does anybody have anything to say before we get into Parties to Crime?
Nothing, except that I have to leave at 4 o'clock today.
Okay.
I've got to be at the coast later.
All right, Don.
Now, I should mention one other thing, too, I guess, before we start into the draft. Now, several weeks ago, I sent out a tentative outline of the entire proposed code. Each of you should have received one of those, along with a series of what, for want of a better term, I've called recap sheets, which list the complete history of each of our drafts up to now. We will maintain one of these on all of our drafts hereafter. So now this draft of the code, and each of your notebooks has a copy of that in there too, in addition to the one we sent to you. so that you can get an idea of what the proposed code will look like when it's completed. This is tentative yet, of course, as I indicated in the bulletin I sent out, that I realize this, the commission may want to change this or add to it or delete some of the provisions we have in there. But to give us a little bit of continuity, we're at the point now where I felt that we should see how it looks in comparison to the model penal code, for example, and the form and structure of it.
Everybody got a copy of the annual report or the biennial report.
That one, I thought, a masterful job of not telling the legislature anything.
Well, it was typical.
To let them, to make sure they didn't interfere with our duty before we finished it.
Nobody mentioned a word about it.
No.
Of course, the master.
I'm not sure anybody read it.
The masterful thing about it was that the report was printed 4 months after the budget was approved.
Yes.
I felt duty bound to submit the report. So.
Well, article section 1 on parties to crime. I think we just as well get into it. And I just have a question to start off, and then I'm going to let you explain it. As I read this, Don, it's going to apply both to. Misdemeanors and felonies, and
yes.
That's going to be a departure from the present law.
Well, no, it won't, insofar as principles are concerned, because that's really what we're talking about here. We're talking about accessories before the fact, which, of course, under our present statutes no longer exist. They're considered as principles. Now, the present statute defines accessory. Now, and that is limited to accessories after the commission of a felony. So that then now that's 161230 defines the term, and that's set out on page 2 of the draft. And I've set out the text of the other statutes that we have now. And at the bottom of page 1, of course, 161.210 provided there are no accessories and misdemeanors.
We got it in the big one.
But you see, you take that with the definition of accessory, we're talking about accessories after the fact. We're not talking about principles. So, in fact, I don't think we're changing anything. Although I think it's certainly would be uncommon to see someone prosecuted under a present statute for a misdemeanor basis of being an accomplice, but I don't think there's anything in our law that prohibits it. So I don't think we're changing that aspect of it.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with getting one definition, let it apply to
let
the
it apply across.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
I didn't feel that we were changing the law with respect to misdemeanors in that respect.
Well, I don't either. Do you, John?
I guess not.
because
I wrote a note here when I read this last night, and I and now that you no, I don't. If go ahead, Don.
Okay. Now this draft has 7 sections, and nowhere in the draft are the terms principal or accessory used. This draft does not cover accessories after the fact, and that will be covered not under parties to crime, but under interference with administration of justice, since this will be conduct that would take place after the commission of a crime. But principles after the fact will still be covered by the revision. Now, the commentary on pages 1 and 2, all that does is just indicates that we're not intending to change the law that we have now. As you know, that under common law, there were distinctions made between an accessory before the fact and an accessory after the fact and a principal. Of course, our statute changed that years ago. And in fact, most states now have either by statute or by case law abrogated any distinction between principals and accessories. So we don't change that, although we don't use those terms. We talk in terms of criminal liability. Now this draft on parties complements and goes right along with our draft that this subcommittee worked on not too long ago, and that was with respect to culpability. Of course, in a sense, we're talking about culpability here, but we're setting out the basis on which you can be liable not only for conduct of your own, but for conduct of another person. So the first section then says that a person is guilty of a crime if it is committed by his own conduct or by the conduct of another person for which he is criminally liable, or both. Now,
I only had one slight argument. Principle involved or anything else. It seems to me it could be said a little smoother if we perhaps say a person is guilty of a crime if he commits it, or if it is committed by another person for whose conduct he's criminally liable.
You mean what's the antecedent of something there?
Well, you fellas that know all these English rules, I just don't.
I was looking at the same thing, but I finally decided that it was okay.
Or you could say, if commit, person's guilty of a crime, if committed by him or committed by another person.
Well, I think we want conduct in there. Now, you remember, conduct is a term we've defined, and culpability.
Okay.
Would it read a little bit smoother if we leave out the word the before conduct?
So it reads by his own conduct or by conduct of another person?
Yeah.
No, I don't think that hurts
anything. I forgot about the culpability tieback.
We define conduct as meaning an act or omission and its accompanying mental state.
Yeah, yeah. I remember the mental state argument.
Well, the reason for that, when I first read it, it seemed to me like we were, for which means the person for which. You'd say for whom, but that would count. Or by conduct of another person for which.
Yeah, it relates back to conduct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At least that's what was intended.
I don't know why, but I like it a little better without the V there. I'll take my coat off.
Now, this is very close to the model. Except that it seemed to me, since we're talking about criminal liability, that the term criminally liable was more appropriate than legally accountable. Now, subcommittee might feel otherwise on that, but...
Anything in the notes in the Model Penal Code says why they use legally accountable?
No. Of course, their headline on this section is liability for conduct of another. Then...
But there might be legally accountable for some conduct, but not criminally liable.
Well, yeah, I think that's right. And it seemed to me to have a little more precision to it to use criminally liable.
I agree.
But Michigan uses legally accountable without explaining why, New York uses criminally liable rather than legally accountable.
Yeah, a person could be legally liable for conduct of another that he didn't know a darn thing about, but not criminally liable.
Yeah.
Not until you get to the part on corporations. It that'll take care of those fellows.
We don't define criminally liable. I wasn't paying attention. Is it defined anywhere? Is it defined anywhere?
Well, we define in Section 2, we say under what circumstances a person is criminally liable. Yeah.
What's a wherefore of the conduct of another person for which he's criminally liable is like the case that you cite in the next page about the guy that owns the tavern whose bartender sells liquor to a minor. That's one example, isn't it?
Yeah, and that would be an instance where he's made liable because of the wording of the statute. Yeah.
Give me an example where he's made liable, where no statute is involved and he's liable.
Well, he'd be liable then under the provisions of subsection 2 of Section 2 if he aids or abets or solicits another person to commit a crime, or if he has a legal duty to attempt to prevent the commission of a crime and doesn't do it. For example, and I cite, I think, in my commentary, our present escape statute, yeah, which imposes the duty on a guard or a police officer to prevent an escape.
Well, and just a general informational question, Don. In the scheme of things, parties to crime are going to follow culpability in the draft.
Yeah.
In the book.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I don't have any questions about Section 1. If you resolve the semantical question.
Did you want to eliminate?
I'm for it the way it is.
Okay. Did you want to eliminate the article there, the before
no,
conduct?
No, it's all right. I don't care.
Okay. Well, I guess why don't we just approve them as we go along? I'll entertain a motion to approve Section 1.
So moved.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Section 2. All right.
Now, this then goes on to say under what circumstances you would be criminally liable. And it provides. And this would be looking towards future statutes, that if the statute so provides, and State versus Brown, which is the case you were referring to, that's that statute there which prohibited furnishing or selling liquor to a minor has been amended since that time, but the way the statute read in 1914, imposed liability not only upon an employee, but also on the employer, the owner, tavern or establishment that sold intoxicants. In other words, a strict liability concept. Now, this sub one is really a strict liability approach, and as we talked earlier with respect to culpability, that we want to make it clear that as a matter of policy that we're not advocating strict liability for most crimes, but at the same time recognizing that there may be instances in which the legislature may want to impose strict liability. So this is really another way of saying that within the context of this draft, that if the statute so provides, then there would be would be liability.
But what's the use of saying it twice? Once in the statutes which does so provide, and another time here.
Well, I think it's just a question of trying to maintain some continuity here through these articles, and not having anything that is inconsistent with respect to this draft as opposed to our culpability draft. Now, but we are talking, and of course we are talking here about criminal liability. That is, being susceptible to punishment or prosecution for commission of a crime rather than the mental state that's required.
here where I can see everybody better.
Well, what you're saying, Don, is that more of a structural reason that you have it there than a substantive reason?
Well, of course, although these two things are interrelated, culpability and liability, they're not the same. I don't mean to mislead you on that. I don't think they're the same at all. But at the same time, liability might exist by because of the statute in the absence of culpability.
Who has a sub 2 section C, who has a legal duty to prevent the commission of a crime?
The guard in the penitentiary has done this, put it out.
Is that
the escape.
Yeah. But a citizen observing or having knowledge of a crime about to be committed has no strict stated liability to prevent it or to...
Not ordinarily, unless there is some statute making him so liable.
Yeah. For example, what was the one we were talking about earlier? The statute about being about a police officer commanding the assistance of another. Under those circumstances, we have a statute now that provides that a police officer can command a civilian to assist. And under those circumstances, you might have liability. I think if a police officer told you to do a certain thing to assist him and you refused.
What if you had a... you have a city ordinance that says that it's a violation of it to leave the key in your car. So Don Pallette parks in downtown Portland, leaves his key in the ignition, takes off, and one of my clients jumps in his car and drives it off. Ends up in Idaho, charged with grand larceny. Strict interpretation of this, could you be charged?
No, I certainly not.
You had a legal duty to prevent the commission of the crime.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we're implying by this that the guy that had the legal duty to prevent it is guilty of the same crime as he didn't prevent.
That's what I wonder.
Well, the thing I think of is take a current case. In fact, this guy Brudos was picking up girls around the country.
Alleged to have been.
Well, he's going to be defending him.
Oh, is that right?
No, I'm not.
Well, that's alleged to have been by his own statements.
In the newspaper?
No, no. By his own statements to his own psychiatrist, among others.
Privileged information was let out?
Mm-hmm. It wasn't let out by the psychiatrist. The medical society can't take after the poor psychiatrist.
Right.
Just that I have better sources than you. Anyway, he picked up this girl in Portland and brought her down to his house and drove into his house. And as he drove in, while his wife said, dinner's ready. Well, he says, wait just a minute. And he tied up the girl and left her in the car and went in and ate dinner and then came back and finished her off. Now, his wife certainly had some knowledge in view of his rogues gallery of people that committed this sort of thing on over a period of some time, some knowledge of what he was about to do. That's the only reason he brought women tied up to the house.
Does she have a legal duty
at this point to knowing what's happened in the past, knowing what he's got in mind, while he's eating dinner to go to the phone and call the cops and say, my husband's getting ready to kill his 18th woman or something like this? This is about the number he's admitted to.
Well, they have had some cases, one rather recently in Portland, manslaughter of a case against the mother, wasn't there, where for not taking care of her kid and letting them die?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit different, but the same question, basically, I think, that you're raising.
Well, there was a recent one where mother was convicted of rape. where her boyfriend was raping the child. And
statutory rape?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the mother, evidence was that the mother knew it and didn't do anything to stop it. Remember? It was tried moments
ago. She went past the stage and stopped it in that case.
She ate a little bit.
Well, she just told him, well, you want to do what you want to do, why go do it?
Well, I wouldn't think that this wife that you're talking about, Brodus, whatever his name is, you'd expect her to do something about it. I don't think she'd be criminally liable, would you?
I don't think so.
Well, I just,
but it's
that's
hard
a pretty shadowy
it's
line.
It's hard
there,
to draw the line between that and the mother not giving kid what the kid needs to stay alive.
In fact, now we had on this manslaughter by neglect situation, mm-hmm. we had a similar case in Lane County about 4 years ago where we prosecuted both the father and the mother, and this was a case of just neglect of this one child in the family. And of course, the father's defense was that he didn't participate in this, but we were able to show that he had knowledge of what the mother was doing, that she was not taking care of the child and wasn't providing the necessary food and shelter for the child, and the child contracted pneumonia and died of malnutrition and pneumonia. And
he showed knowledge.
Yeah, and we were able to, and although he was more of a passive participant.
And you got a conviction on both of them.
Yes.
Well, seems to me this is the kind of conduct that particularly outrages public decency, in the sense of general sense of public decency. That parents for involved in one of these malnutrition or neglect situations, the parents were involved in one of these incestuous arrangements, and it happened more frequently than we think, I'm sure, or as I say, this other thing, which is going to be this guy, apparently, from what we know so far, is one of the great murderers of all time in the country, just Marion County, Oregon. And it seems to me that there are other people who have knowledge of the situation. May not be in the position of being conspirators or co-conspirators or something of this sort.
Well, she comes darn close under those facts you just stated, yes. Seems to me, but I still can't see how you could.
Conspiracy is always required an overt act. And
an agreement. In his facts, he didn't state any agreement,
right.
Just
no,
knowledge.
No, and
I don't think there was any assistance on her part.
Accessory.
Or agree to it, agreement to assist. That might be enough, but.
Accessorial conduct always has required overtness too, hasn't it? I mean, you say that you got it to the jury just on the basis of the fact that he knew.
That he knew and made no attempt to.
The omission of the act is what you're talking about. And that's what we've already determined, really. What we're talking about is knowledge and omission of acts.
Well, under those circumstances, then Mrs. Brudos would be guilty.
She'd be guilty, right.
Presently, and this might change it. Because if we had to determine her culpability within the framework of Section 2 here, and you couldn't show that she aided or abetted.
C is applicable, though, I think.
Well, does she have a legal
that's
title?
What we're talking about, whether she does have a legal
Well, Dewey, didn't we say under the other culpability in that the omission of the act was...
An omission to do an act that you had a legal duty to perform.
Yeah, but it's a duty that's one
you
that
get
you
back
have
to the same place.
Legally prescribed duty to perform, and I'm just wondering what are the things that you're
but
legally required
to do. You see there, under culpability, we were talking about
the actor himself, his own conduct or omission.
That's right.
And here we're talking about liability for conduct of another, you see.
Yeah.
So
that's why I'm wondering, at what point does a wife in this circumstance, or a husband in the Lane County circumstance, or a wife in the Multnomah County circumstance have some, or do they ever have a requirement to do they ever become liable for their husband's or wife's conduct, as the case may be?
Well, yeah, and for example, this case John mentioned about the rape situation. Now, Michigan cited a case in Michigan that they had in mind when they formulated this sub C, and I set that out on page 5. That was a case where a husband wanted to get grounds for a divorce, so he wanted to get his wife into a situation where she would commit adultery. So he hired a man to commit adultery with her, but she wouldn't cooperate, and she resisted this man's advances, and he raped her, and the husband was aware of it. In fact, according to Casey, he was in the next room, and he made no effort to come to the aid of his wife. And the court there, and this was in 1886, found that he had an affirmative duty to come to his wife's aid, and that his failure to do so made him criminally liable for the conduct of this man who raped his wife.
And if Mr. Gertmaker wants to indict Mrs. Brudos, he has to go back to People v. Chapman, Michigan, 1886, to find the ground for that.
He might, during that.
He'd do it, though.
Yeah, he would. Well, I don't doubt that.
And I'm not so sure we can answer these questions about when the legal duty lies.
Well, as I say, this is the sort of thing that is generally considered, I think by most people, to be a particular outrage type of arrangement, any one of these three circumstances we've described.
But are we creating a situation where a person might be guilty of a crime because we put this in here that otherwise wouldn't be? And if so, we ought to know what legal duty is.
Is there any affirmative duty on anybody who knows that a crime is being committed to report the same, or that is about to be committed to report the same?
No.
Not that I know of, I don't think.
No. We teach them in civics class in the sixth grade that there is.
I don't think there is.
There's no statutory law that I'm aware of. You have to look at each situation, and you have to look at the defendant in relation to the victim or the crime that was committed. In some instances, certainly with a parent-child relationship, it's not too difficult to find a legal duty there.
We went into that very carefully and thoroughly in the old goon cases, where a lot of officers of the Teamsters Union knew that mill over there, and the Rossett case was going to be burned down, and didn't tell anybody about it. As a matter of fact, we got a couple of guys in jail that particularly knew about it, all the details, and we finally decided we had to turn them out, or the judge decided for us, but we couldn't come up with a theory to prosecute them when they should have been prosecuted.
That was Dave Beck.
He was one that he didn't come into Oregon for 20 years. He thought, or no, the rest of his, he never has come into Oregon because he's not sure there isn't a secret indictment out for him. But that's the reason there isn't, is the thing we're talking about. He knew all about it, and we could prove that he knew that it was going to occur. But that's all we could prove.
We don't have a statute then for somebody who to prevent a crime in all reasonableness, if they can.
Does any state have
statute now?
Does anybody have this? Is there a model on it or anything?
Does anybody require this?
Oh, yeah.
Anybody require what?
Yeah, require somebody to
take reasonable measures to prevent a crime if they have knowledge.
Are you talking about prevent or report?
Prevent and report.
Both consider tipping off the police well in advance of the thing is prevention as well as reporting.
That's too much like Russia for me.
Now, the model penal code has this provision on having a legal duty.
What one is it?
It's set on page 20 of your draft. Your
yeah, but when you said, oh, yes, to Bob Tanner, that does anybody have a statute making it a legal duty to report a crime he knows about, I think you were thinking about something else. There's no statute any place, is there?
Well, I was talking about this is similar language to what we have here.
I yeah. thought that's what oh, you yeah. were talking about, and Bob was talking
but
about
just to report it,
yeah.
No, I, no.
Where is it? Where
on page on page 20 of your draft, under sub 3.3, mm-hmm. that's under model penal code. And then Michigan has a...
Well, that's what we're talking about, isn't
it? Identical.
No, that's not what we're talking about. We got in this.
Well, let's... I think we're talking about two separate things, or we're talking about two things really as far as sub 2 is concerned. One, whether we're going to, by this language, we're creating a crime that doesn't exist. And two, my concern when you're talking about Mrs. Brudos, that whereas under the present law, possibly we could, she could be charged with the crime, but whether by adopting this language we might be preventing the prosecution of somebody like that. However, could we do this? Could we look at sub 1 and take it in order? I think sub 1 is really moot. I think Bruce raised a good point with regard to it, and perhaps you answered it. I'm assuming that we all agree that it's okay, notwithstanding your point. If so,
your point was that it's just redundant.
Yeah, yeah. If you, because it would only apply in the presence of another statute anyway. The other statute would take care of it, but I think there's
Don's point is that just
reasonable what Don says, because we're telling the whole story here.
Yeah. We're telling, right.
As to the meaning of criminal liability for conduct of another.
Right. Now, in sub 2, Don, where did you get the language promote or facilitate?
Well,
is that identical? And I think it would help me in any event if we just go right down it, and maybe we can answer the question when we get into the subsection.
Yeah. This
it sounds okay to me. I don't have any quarrel with it, but I just want to know what the precedent for it is.
Well, this comes from the Model Penal Code.
Page 20.
And I...
Middle of page.
It's important when we're talking about solicitation that we keep in mind the inchoate crimes provisions. And I've related my commentary to George Platt's commentary, and you should have a copy of this before you, I think. This is in subcommittee number 3, and it hasn't been approved yet, but his discussion about solicitation and commands with respect to an attempt and where you might be guilty for conspiracy or criminal solicitation, I think the comments apply equally to this draft. Now, solicitation, as I show here, has the same meaning for the purposes of this section as proposed in the inchoate crimes article. Now, and George Platt has defined solicitation there as meaning a person commits a crime of solicitation if with the purpose of causing another to engage in specific conduct constituting a crime or an attempt to commit such crime, he commands or solicits such other person to engage in that conduct.
Okay.
That's on page 21 of the Inchoate Crimes draft.
Well, anybody have any quarrel with the promoter facilitate? Or is anyone concerned by the fact that by reason of the way this is worded, it seems like we're stopping after the crime is committed. There's no accessory after the fact.
No, there's no accessory after the fact in this draft, no.
Will there be?
Yeah, and...
But there'll be separate crimes. They'll be sufficient in themselves.
Well, where will the accessory after the fact come in our scheme of things?
It'll come in under interference with...
Justice
or the administrator. I forget the exact
title. Yeah, that's the article I'm working on
now.
Compounding.
Interference with the administration of justice is the title of the article, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Interference with justice. That's what Douglas said happened to Fortas.
And he hopes it won't happen to him.
Okay. Well, then that'll come in later. That clears the question I have. Nobody apparently is concerned by that. Solicits or commands such other person to commit the crime. That's the accessory before the fact. That's the principle, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay, I got no problem there. B, does the Mrs. Brudos situation come in here by use of the word agrees? She sees him out in the car, the gal out in the car tied up, and she makes no overt act. She knows, and her agreement is implied by her
feeding him supper first.
Yeah, or refusal or failure or to go out and call the cops.
Yeah, as implied by her previous conduct, as a result of which he knew she wouldn't call the cops.
So there's the maintenance of the present law by the use of your language here. You agree?
Yeah, aids or abets.
Or agrees.
Yeah. Is defined by our case law, and the courts have given it a pretty fixed meaning, and it seemed to me, although it's old language, it is language that should be retained for the purposes of accomplices.
Agrees in this case then would fit all three of those other circumstances. In effect, agrees would fit all of these three other cases we're talking about, the Marion County, Multnomah County, and
right.
Lane County.
Right. In planning or committing.
Of course, you got to go back to with the intent to promote or facilitate.
Why wouldn't you just say in the perpetration of the crime? And that would include planning and committing and perpetrating the crime.
Well, here you've got him guilty if the crime was never perpetrated but only planned.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm wondering if we want to go that far.
Well, now wait a minute now. I hope I haven't got that here, because if they just plan it, it doesn't go any further.
It shouldn't. If now, it wouldn't be criminal. No. I don't think.
Because that would amount to what we would contemplate under our proposal under attempts. That would amount to an attempt, or at least amount to solicitation, depending on what had happened between the parties. But there you're talking about incomplete conduct. You're talking about a criminal conspiracy, say, or a solicitation to get A solicits B to commit a crime, but B doesn't commit it. But this draft on parties, we're talking about completed criminal conduct.
Yeah, but here we're saying that he's guilty for the conduct of another if with intent to promote or facilitate it, he aids or abets somebody else in planning the crime.
Yeah, but you have to look back up to our first sentence. a person is liable for the conduct of another person constituting a crime.
In other words, crime has to have been committed.
Crime has to have been committed, yeah. If it hasn't been committed, he might be liable under inchoate crimes for an attempt.
Yeah.
If something was done towards the completion of it or accomplishment of it, and they're liable for the conduct of another person constituting a crime. Yeah, that constituting a crime takes care of that, doesn't it?
Well, this would not... Well, okay.
Now on page 5 of your draft, in the second paragraph there, I set out the Oregon cases that define aids and abets.
My old Rosser case.
Yeah, that was your case, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Which one was that?
Rosser? State against Rosser. That was the burning the mill down over West Hill.
Now, that's a very often cited case. No, that's you see, there they talk about advises, counsel, procures, or encourages another to commit the crime. And meaning to countenance, assist, give aid, and to include knowledge of the wrongful purpose of the perpetrator. Counsel and encouragement.
Of countenancing it then becomes aiding and abetting.
Yeah, if you know what he's
know
about
what he's to about do. To do, and all right, then I presume we're not going to let
now
Mrs. Brudos go free.
Why,
verified.
If we're going to have a second section on attempts, a separate section, why do you have attempts to aid or abet here?
Well.
He